This is Louisa Beale with Radio Tacoma. I want to tell you a story. This is a story of fear, misunderstanding, and how you can have the power to transform it. At the end of May this year, social media ran wild with rumors and notices that buses filled with Antifa were planning on invading small towns to wreak havoc. This message was posted on Twitter. As protests were taking place in multiple states across the U.S. Sunday night, a newly created account tweeted, quote, "Tonight's the night, comrades." It had a brown raised fist emoji and said, "Tonight we move into the residential areas, the white hoods, and we take what's ours." Scary, huh? This turned out to be a fake Twitter account from a white nationalist group posing as Antifa. So what is Antifa? According to Snopes.com, the movement called Antifa gets its name from a short form of anti-fascist, which is about the only thing that the members agree on. But these notices raged on about buses filled with Antifa and were planning on invading small towns from Curry County, Oregon to South Bend, Indiana. And, as luck would have it, on Sunday, June 3rd, a bus drove into Forks. Forks, Washington is a town of about 3,500 people. It is in the northwest corner of Washington State on the Olympic Peninsula. Some people know it as the setting for the book series Twilight. Forks and the surrounding area have become a popular tourist destination.
So when we refer to the greater Forks area, that's about a 30-mile radius, which includes the city of Forks, which is kind of the hub of activity, closest grocery store, things like that. But that's a population of about 10,000 in that broader area.
This area is located in the heart of the Olympic Peninsula. There is an impressive range of recreational options. Among them are the Olympic National Park, the Ho Rainforest, Claylock Beach, Lake Ozette, Cape Flattery, Lake Crescent, Solduck Falls, and many scenic rivers and mountain trails. Many families come here to camp. One of those families came on June 3rd in a school bus.
So there had been some word through social media that there were groups of Antifa who were heading into the Forks area. And that misinformation rallied up some local people who were concerned that their town was going to be attacked, ravaged, lit on fire, children attacked, whatever the scenario was. There was fear that this was happening. And simultaneously, and I believe not in a connected manner, a bus with a family was coming into the Forks area, stopping in Forks on their way to a camping space to pick up supplies for their camping trip. So the white bus pulls into Thrifty Mart and is met there by 7 or 8, I believe, buses of people who appeared to be armed, who began to question them about what their intentions were, whether or not they were part of this group that they had heard were coming into town. From my understanding, the family continued repeatedly to say that they had no association with this group, that they were just coming through town on their way to a camping to find a secluded space for this camping trip.
Even though it was frightening to be questioned by people with guns, it might have just ended there, but it didn't. This is from the Peninsula Daily News, Saturday, June 6th, 2020. The family had shopped for camping supplies and were confronted by 7 or 8 carloads of people in the grocery store parking lot. The people in the parking lot repeatedly asked them if they were Antifa protesters. The family told the people they weren't associated with any such group and were just camping. The family had to drive their bus around vehicles in the parking lot in order to get back onto Highway 101. The family told deputies that at least four vehicles followed them as they drove northbound out of Forks. They said that two of the vehicles had people in them carrying what appeared to be semi-automatic rifles. They drove their bus onto a logging spur road where they pitched a tent to camp for the night, but then heard gunshots in the distance and power saws down the road from where they were camping. They packed their camp to leave. Then they found that someone had cut down trees across the spur road. Four Forks High School students contacted deputies as they drove up the road toward the campers. The students used their chainsaw to clear the roadway for the family. After hearing about this incident, I wanted to hear what people from Forks had experienced. I had the opportunity to have a conversation with several people from Forks about this. I talked with Anne, Michelle, Elena, Sandra, Berlinda, MJ, and two Sarahs.
I just happened to be on social media at the time that someone shared a picture of the bus in the Thriftway parking lot and said something about, well, check this out. And, you know, this, they look like they're here for trouble, and started sharing some pictures and opinions about who was on the bus and what the local Forks folks were doing. I'm happy to say that there were several of us involved in that chat asking why they felt it was their right to question these folks on the bus, not knowing anything about who they were, or that did not seem to make a huge difference to several people in that chat, though others were saying that they were here to do some harm in Forks. And this was my first time encountering that sort of chatter or part of the story was at that moment. And so I just wanted to share that part, that there already were several folks that were kind of calling that out and saying, you know, it's not really right to be approaching people in the parking lot and asking them their political affiliations.
This is Berlinda James. I came into the picture earlier in the afternoon when the owner from Fred's Guns in Seguin had raised an all call for armed people because of this supposed threat from Antifa coming onto the peninsula. And that spread over social media that I could see early on and into Forks. People were very frightened here that I know. And people were frightened along the peninsula. So people were reacting very quickly, and that share from that owner of Fred's Guns spread like I have never seen. It was going over by email. It was going over by Facebook. People were being warned of this supposed threat until people started backtracking on it because the Seguin police had said there was nothing going on in Seguin at their Black Lives Matter protest. So then the owner of Fred's Guns owner came on and made another video and told everybody to stand down. And so seeing all of that in real time, I could see the terror that people that I knew personally were seeing across the peninsula, just to put that into perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I came in later into this small group. And then later I just had through social media friends from Florida checking in on me to see what was going on, think friends from Seattle, and then I had to read up on it, and it says, oh, Forks made the national news with this negative incident.
I was thinking since June 3rd, I've had a lot of conversations with friends across the political spectrum, and really heart-to-heart conversations about what we felt made those people go down to the store. How 24 people went down there. to confront these people on the bus. There is that division still here. If you speak badly of that group, then you're against Forks. And I mean, it's just the way it is, but I feel strong enough in my community where I can have these honest conversations with my co-citizens and ask those hard questions about what made them go down there. Because I myself was not convinced that it was to protect the town, because we didn't all get the memo. And there were people on speed dial, and my family was not one of those people that were on speed dial. So I had to ask those questions, and it's an ongoing conversation. It's a great conversation.
You know, was it bravery? Was it bravery to act on, you know, what we're calling fear? But in some ways, I'm not sure it was fear, you know, in the sense that if you're afraid, then yet you're arming yourself and going and confronting. You don't wait and see. You don't allow something to play out. Even if you say, okay, well, I'm not calling law enforcement, I'm just going to deal with it. And so this was already spreading. So if you say you're afraid, well, then why are you all showing up with guns? And then number two, you could say, well, they're being brave because they're afraid. But okay, so you checked out the bus and it was a multiracial family, and yet then you still don't believe them.
I think there are probably hundreds of perspectives on what's happened, or certainly several different perspectives on what's happened, and where the interrogation was appropriate and where it was not appropriate, and maybe it was okay that they were questioning them and at the Thrifty Mart parking lot, but maybe it wasn't okay that they trapped them.
Yet they were pursued and then terrorized up in the woods with gunfire. And is that fear? That's not fear. That's outright terrorism and bullying. And I don't know how anyone can justify that. If you drew the line at saying, I'm going to approach a bus and ask because you're curious and you've heard this rumor that you want to believe, and then you say, oh, okay, you know, it's a family, and you go about your day. But that's not what happened. And until those, it's not even really about law enforcement. It's about, it's about integrity. It's about honesty, about how you treat your fellow human being, your fellow humans.
So I think that while they might have been afraid, and fear is at the root of a lot of social dissent, So is oppression, and these were really oppressive acts that they had permission, really, somehow, to engage in.
And when I hear about this idea of you know, still trying to justify it, or we need to not talk about it anymore, that's what ends up getting us to where we are now, and for people to have to take action and to denounce these activities, this, you know, this terrorism, and I will continue to call it that because that's what it was. And, you know, anytime someone says something to me about, well, we need to just forget about it, or we need to not talk about it, or they were just protecting the town, that, in my perspective and opinion, needs to be called out every single time.
And I think that part of the divisiveness that I saw is that comment that I made earlier, from social media, that I'm seeing that, why are we still talking about this? Because that group of people who went down to the bus was keeping our whole town safe. So people are putting all of us in together like we were all safe, even though many of us feel that we weren't safe, that we're at even more danger because a group of people can come together like that and be armed in our town.
Going to the Thriftway there, you know, it kind of concerned me because I didn't know a lot of the people that were involved in it. You know, I knew some of them, but if that happened to be me and my family, most of them wouldn't know who I was. So in my own town, I could be put in this situation of, you know, having a mob mentality of we're going to protect our own, and not knowing that I'm a part of this community as well. anybody in our community can be faced with that. And because, I mean, we're not a big community, but we're not small enough. We know everybody. I mean, there's 3,500 people in Forks, and I don't know everybody in Forks. And so it's just kind of concerning that any family in the city of Forks can be put through that at any time. And I think that's the biggest takeaway from this, and the amount of people that came together and to address it was, I think, more surprisingly bigger than the city of Forks expected.
Yes, the response was bigger than the city of Forks expected. How big? Well, big enough to catch my attention. On Sunday, June 14th, there was a half-page ad in the Seattle Times. Most of it was signatures, over 300 signatures. And this is what the ad said. The Greater Forks community stands against violence. The following individuals and businesses strongly oppose the intolerable treatment of the family visiting the Forks area on June 3, 2020. We pledge our support of a thorough investigation and commit to addressing issues of racism and violence in our communities through education and communication. I was amazed. How could this many people come together with this statement in such a short time? I had to know. So I sent an email to the address in the ad, greaterforkscommunity@gmail.com, and I got an answer.
And there was a sense of urgency. So not only did people clearly denounce and were horrified by what had happened, word was spreading across the nation like wildfire, right, about what had happened in this town of Forks. So we thought, okay, we really have to get that. We have to move on this.
So Sandra is my mom, and she and I were having a phone conversation two days after the incident, where we were really just sharing with one another kind of the pain that we were experiencing after learning about this incident. An idea that I had was that someone start gathering names of people who are in opposition of this, like who really are having this kind of visceral, somatic experience from this. And the reason why a list of names kind of came to mind for me was just for a couple of reasons. One, that I have found throughout my lifetime when experiences are difficult, there is some kind of comfort or relief in collective experience and having the support and encouragement of people.
So I enlisted Michelle's help with that because it was a significant undertaking and I did not have the expertise to put that together. And there were many elements. I'd like for Michelle, maybe in a moment, for you to talk about the framework that you built to manage the influx of input in the whole project.
Sure, we, you know, Facebook obviously and definitely has its good and bad points, but when I saw that there was a place that I could jump in and Sandra was looking for some help, that's of course a natural flow for me to take some sort of, I want to take some sort of positive action. And so right away we were able to talk and hit it off really well as far as, I think, communication, you know, put that Facebook page on there and started to get the word out. And part of Sandra and my efforts was really wording. Sandra's a great wordsmith, and to kind of craft that, and then I would challenge her and she would challenge me, and just to get things right. And we had to be quick about it. And so I'm sort of patting ourselves on the back because I'm really proud of that work to get that out there really fast.
So, you know, so by 2 p.m. that was all built and ready to go, to include having crafted this ad statement, because people needed to know, what am I signing off on in the newspaper? What am I putting my name to? So Michelle did the infrastructure for the Facebook page, set up donation links, set up an email address. We wrote the ad statement. So we had all that in place. So as the influx of names came in, we were prepared to manage that incredible flow of data. In the initial post that we put up, we set out some guidelines. You had to either be a resident or a former resident of the Forks area to have your name in the ad. Anybody could donate, however. And we didn't require a donation to have your name in the paper. So many people, particularly in this time of unemployment, couldn't afford that. And then we kept that confidential. So nobody knew who donated or how much they donated to protect their privacy. We asked that they collect only names of people they know, because we didn't want people getting on the Facebook page or in the ad that were going to have a negative consequence. So we wanted to really manage that. So all of that framework was set up, and we found that Facebook was probably not the ideal way to manage that data. And I know we've talked about that as a group, because you might make a comment or submit your name to a post, but it comes in 20 lower, and then somebody else would respond. So it was a lot of continually going through and combing through and filtering all of that data to try and get it as accurate as we could.
And we raised just about $8,000 in a very short period of time, and of which around 5,500 was used for the three ads that we did in the Seattle Times, the Spokane Inlander, and also our local Forks Forum. We took some time to choose those particular papers. The family that was traumatized and terrorized here in town was from Spokane. But they're living in their bus. So if we had any hopes to reach someone that knew them, that they could hear our words, that they, like Sarah Ironhill was talking about, that they know people are condemning and have condemned this behavior. To have that kind of support was important to all of us, to try and let them know that, without further chasing them down or trying to get a hold of them, because, you know, perhaps that's not what they wanted.
And the Seattle Times was the soonest publication, would have been next Sunday, where we get the greatest coverage. And the deadline date was Tuesday. So that was 3 days after we started our Facebook page. So it was really, really quick. So that was incentive. I think a couple of the things that helped us be successful at that was the fact that there was an urgency, that there was largely a large response to denouncing this. It wasn't like a controversial thing largely. We had established and respected and valued relationships, and we used that to reach out. So, you know, I reached out to everyone I'm connected to. Michelle did, Sarah did, and Sarah did, and Berlinda, you know, everybody just kind of started reaching out. So we used the social network to do that and solicited others to reach out to theirs. So, you know, when you ask, one of your questions was, what can other communities do? You know, it's really grassroots. Begin with who you know and start there, and use good language that's going to invite people in and hopefully break down barriers. It was also really impressive, in my opinion, to see the breadth of people's names who signed on to the ad across the socioeconomic political spectrum. So that was really, really, really touching to see everybody come together. And that also is not uncommon, to set those things aside and come together for a common cause. I think one other thing that may have contributed to some of the success too was we posted regular updates almost daily about how much money we'd raised, deadline dates coming up, how many names there were. So just keep everybody apprised as to the progress. And so that I think was helpful as well.
We each had our part to play and making contact. She was talking about making contact with folks that she knew or that we all knew, and it sort of branched off from there. But I wanted to say too, there wasn't several organizations, and one was the wilderness organizations, the National Park Conservancy or National Park Conservation group, that also made a generous donation, but they wanted to play in the background and be in the background and let individual voices be heard. So I wanted to add that piece, that there was also backing from some different organizations, but also that I was questioned once about, well, are these businesses just self-serving? Is Forks doing this because they rely on tourism? And I would like to say that everyone that I came in contact with did this from their heart, including these organizations, that it didn't have anything to do with preserving business or tourism. Everyone that I talked to knew this terrorist action was wrong.
You know, from that as well was shown the showing of support. People were willing to put themselves out and put their own business in jeopardy to show that we're against your ideology of our small town outlaw group that took things into their own hand.
This was an amazing act of pulling the community together. But now what? What happens to this energy as the crisis passes? How does this enthusiastic group maintain the momentum toward uniting the Greater Forks community? I think they have the tools to do this. Let's listen to what they say.
While all the people that signed off on the ad subscribed to that, you know, could fully endorse the ad statement, everybody, there are very diverse ideas about how do we move forward with educating the community on issues of violence and racism. I'm going to even take that into discrimination. I almost wish we would have used that word.
But I still think that there is a lot of education that is needed and some tools that need to be brought forward to understand how to address these and have these conversations.
So we moved forward with some quick actions, things that we could accomplish relatively quickly, really, I think, just to make us feel encouraged, right, you know? And so what we worked on was putting food pantries up. And so there's a food pantry in Forks and one in LaPush, one down at Ho River, and one should be going up out in Beaver soon. So, you know, that was a great and rewarding activity.
In regards to, you know, the greater community of Forks coming together, I think that now more than ever, we are finding our people who are like-minded, who want to do something against violence and racism. And through small grassroots efforts, there are a lot of small groups. For example, the Community Cafe is a recent group that has come together through the Mariposa House. And I think Sarah can speak more to the focus of that group. I'm a member, and because of COVID, a lot of our projects got put on hold. But there's also the Comité de Derechos Humanos de Forks, the Committee for Human Rights in Forks, that started many years ago. And then through the school, you know, as a principal there, we're doing what we can to educate, because that's a part of the ad, was to stand against violence and racism through education and communication. And so we are, you know, we're not perfect in any way. We still have bullying and we still have racism and violence at school. However, we are not avoiding it. We're addressing it through programs. We are implementing the Character Strong program that teaches our students to just be kind to one another and to speak up when they notice something that's not right. We've implemented the Alveus bullying program that was actually started by Berlinda James, was one of the initial people that worked on that. This year, and we implemented the Since Time Immemorial curriculum, which is a Native American education program, and trying to bring in more inclusiveness into our school, because we do serve the Ho tribe, which MJ is a member of, and the Quileute tribe, and even some Macaw members attend our school. And so I think through education and communication, like we tag other groups on the Facebook page so that the word just spreads. With this Derechos Humanos, we have friends in Portland who then reached out to their friends. So I think as far as moving forward, that's my piece, is I'll just continue to be part of these groups when I can and continue to speak up when I see things that aren't right. And I know that the people in this group will do the same.
But earlier in the year, and Lena had talked about the community cafe, which many of the people that are here today have participated in at some point. We started a conversation in the late fall, and really right out of the gate, when we looked at what does Forks do well for children and families, what are we worried about, and what could we do better if we work together. Racism just jumped. I mean, I was really proud to be in a group of probably 50 to 60 people who felt like we're just going to put that out there. You know, it's like the time had kind of come. And within the group, we wanted to look at equity and figure out really how to support children and engage youth in a lot of these conversations. So one of the things that in Community Cafe that we talked about was really using the arts to bridge those gaps across culture and creating some art installations that would be really more permanent fixtures in the community and sort of tell a story there.
One of the things that we discussed was using some of that funding, and then she has some grant funding, and hire somebody to come in and facilitate community discussions that is skilled in issues of violence and discrimination and racism. And you know, have a couple sessions and do some brainstorming and identify what are some activities we want to do both short-term and long-term. And I think that many of the people on the ad would be interested in that. So that's kind of, you know, one of the next steps that we're looking at. And that could encompass, I mean, any idea, and many ideas need to be included in how we're going to actually make that change.
I also wanted to let folks know that through our email, the Greater Forks Community @gmail.com, there's been good conversations there. Some are hard conversations. Some folks are, you know, we'll call us out and then we get to talk. They're surprised that there's a response, a positive response. And I think that that is what's important, is just to keep pushing forward with this. And I think even if discussions are difficult and maybe not everyone comes to an agreement, I know that this group of people have the same goal.
Well, my bias is that we're really going to make a little bit better progress if we can really come at this from a place of love and wanting to create greater understanding, right?
All of us here are very passionate, and we are all very much on the same page when it comes to the incident that happened on June 3rd, but it sure is comforting to me. As a girl who grew up in the city, to have a lifeline to the outside of Forks, just a listening ear of somebody who knows what's happening here and who's interested. Because I feel sometimes like we're on an island, and just talking to you and knowing that there'll be other people listening and hearing what we're going through here in the middle of nowhere, it's comforting just to know that this went around the world. We're not alone here.
Thank you so much for this opportunity, Louisa. I think for me, it's really been cathartic to have to speak with all of my friends and colleagues about this topic and hear the richness of solutions to addressing this and the commitment. Very, very affirming experience. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
So many tools. Community support, schools, communication and discussions through cafes and social media, support of local businesses and nonprofits. But I feel the most powerful tools at their disposal are available to all of us. Passion and love. I would like to close with a quote from Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, author of On Death and Dying. There are only two emotions, love and fear. All positive emotions come from love, all negative emotions from fear. From love flows happiness, contentment, peace, and joy. From fear comes anger, hate, anxiety, and guilt. It's true that there are only two primary emotions, love and fear. But it's more accurate to say that there is only love or fear, for we cannot feel these two emotions together at exactly the same time. They're opposites. If we're in fear, we are not in a place of love. When we're in a place of love, we cannot be in a place of fear. This is Louisa Beale with Radio Tacoma, in conversation with the Greater Forks community.